You're listening to South Florida's good news station, WCNO Palm City.
Are you a homeschooler, or do you know someone who is a homeschool teacher, mother? Well, you're going to want to hear about this exciting book, Biblical Literacy for Kids, teaching students to read the Bible for themselves. As we know, folks, readers are leaders. And Mandy Knowlton, am I saying the last name right?
Knowlton,
just like it's written. K-N-O-W-L-O-T-O-T-O-N.
Yes, my students used to joke that I know a ton because it's Knowlton.
And she's the mother of two, married. Her husband is studying to be a pastor in the Anglican Church.
That's right.
Kind of like what's similar to what happened in my life. Big church, kind of felt like didn't count. Go to a little teeny tiny, extremely friendly church and changed our lives. Great to meet you.
Good to meet you too.
I think it's very, very important. I happen, due to circumstances in my life, at the age of 14, I was living alone in a rooming house with no adult supervision. We won't go into details about that, but nonetheless, I was a high school dropout. But a man, an older man, had told me, listen, read. Knowledge is power. And so we need to get our children reading again. Now, they say that there's a whole lot of kids not reading now. With the good telltale sign is, I broke bread with you, your husband, and your children tonight. Your little boy, his name is?
Caspian
and Daisy.
Yes.
Daisy, over the ocean blue. I'm half crazy over the love of you. It won't be a exciting marriage. I can't afford a carriage, but you look sweet upon the seat of a bicycle built for two. Did you ever hear that before you met me or no?
Nope, I don't think so.
That was very famous when I was a kid. Well, anyway, they're lovely children. But here's the good news about Caspian and Daisy. They both love to read. Now, how old is he? Eight?
Uh-huh. He's eight.
And she is?
11.
And they both really, since you can tell, they sincerely love to read. Okay, so let's find out about biblical literacy for kids. How do we get kids to read? First of all, what made you write this book at this time?
Well, it was because my husband said to me, you need to teach people to do what you do, which my favorite thing to do was to teach students, youth group kids, my kids at Christian school, any kid I could find, to teach them to love the Bible and to really just fall in love with God's story, but also be able to read it for themselves. And the reason why that became so important to me was because many years ago now, probably about 13 years ago, when I was a youth leader in a really small church, I had this conglomeration of mostly middle school students, and I really wanted to have good Bible lessons for them and not just have all the games and things, but actually like teach something and discuss something while we were there. And I discovered really quickly that my students who were there could not read the Bible passage and have a discussion about it, because when they did that, it was like the words just sort of passed before their eyes, and they just didn't. They didn't really pay attention to it. They weren't tracking with it at all. And it was terrible. And so I remember praying and saying, God help me, because I don't know what to do. I don't know how to teach these kids. And everything I had available to me at that time told me that I needed to make my lessons more entertaining and water down the scriptures so that they would understand. And I would
water down the scriptures. I don't like the sound of that.
No, and I didn't like the sound of that either. Basically, I needed to dumb it down, make it simpler, so that they could, you know, pay attention long enough to understand something. But I didn't agree with that. I thought that was wrong, because I really wanted them to have a deep relationship with God and a love for His Word that they could take with them when they were out of my youth group. Because otherwise, what was the point of me being there? So I prayed a lot, and I said, God help, because I can't find anything to help me. And at that time, I was also teaching at public school, and I had, I was teaching elementary school, but I had become, I don't want to say an expert at that time, but I had extra training in literacy instruction, and that was one of my specialty areas. And so what I realized is what the literacy strategies I was teaching at church needed to come, or at school, excuse me, the literacy strategies I was teaching at school needed to come to church, but not in a boring way, but in a way where I would teach my youth group kids the strategies that they needed to be able to read the Bible and be successful at understanding it. So that was great, except that there's like a bazillion strategies, right? There's so many different reading comprehension strategies that you can use. So then it was a matter of going, okay, well, which ones do we use, and why do we use those, and what order should we do teach them in, and all of that sort of thing. And so for many years, I've started trying stuff out. When you take something, throw it at the wall and see what sticks, right?
Like what, for instance? I mean, failure or success, tell me.
Right. Well, trying, there's lists and lists of strategies, right? But like one of them that we talk about in the book is monitoring and clarifying. Monitoring is when I'm reading, do I understand this? Asking that question, do I understand this? Clarifying is if I don't understand it, well, what do I do about that? I got to use a strategy. And there's, I started printing out short, like the biblical text, but on a piece of paper and giving it to my students and saying, okay, we're going to mark on this. And we would mark it up and be like, this word I don't understand, you know, and we'd have a symbol of how, you know, how we did that. Underlining different things, you know, putting arrows, like these things connect, you know, and just the act of using a paper and pencil and writing on it, they were immediately more engaged. It was like, oh, that's an important one. And so anyway, I started putting this together and figuring out what order to teach these things in. And then over the years, got better and better at it. And so the last group I taught of this, a large group that I taught this was my fifth graders at a Christian school. They went from when I got them, they were just like my youth group kids were. They couldn't read the text and understand. And in 6 months, now I had them every day. So we would work, you know, every school day. So we'd work every school day for a little while on this. After 6 months, we could read a passage. They'd have a great big discussion without me really doing much. And they could tell me how it applied to their lives without my help. And that's the goal, right? So then my husband's like, you've got to teach people how to do this because it's so important.
Well, it is. You know, I always said the reason I didn't like reading growing up is because they go, see Jane run, see Dick run after Jane, there goes Spot, arf, arf, there goes. It was, go back and look at one of those books. They were boring. Mm-hmm. No wonder nobody wanted to read. And don't you think children are far more capable? You know, if I could go back in time as a 3 or 4 year old, I would say, please, Mom, teach me 3 or 4 different languages. I just saw a kid on national TV. He started the piano 2 years ago. He's now 4, mm-hmm. playing with a full orchestra, piano. The kids are so capable. They're like sponges. They soak it up.
Absolutely. And that's one of the reasons why teaching biblical literacy is so important. Sometimes people think, oh, I just need to wait, you know, I'll teach them like a story here or there. You know, I send them to Sunday school or, you know, the children's program and that's enough. And then when they're older, we'll get to like really digging into the scriptures. But if the kid can read, and what I mean, they're reading a chapter book, one of those beginning chapter books that has some of the illustrations in it still, mm-hmm. if they can do that, then they can begin to read the Bible really for themselves, and using strategies can help them figure it out. They need to have a Bible that's on their level, which I talk about that in the book. Different Bible translations, people don't realize, really are translated at different reading levels as far as like a grade level. So if you have an 8-year-old or a 9-year-old, you're going to want to get them something like the International Children's Bible, that translation, or the New International Reader's Version, because those are both translated to about a 3rd grade reading level. It's still a translation of the Bible, and they're wonderful not just for kids, but also people like that are learning English as a second language, or people that may have a disability of some kind that reading is really hard for them. So it's a real those are real translations, but they're written at that grade level so that the text is accessible to the child. Now, if you have a high schooler or something, maybe you're going to want to choose the New International Version. That's 7th grade level. The ESV is a 12th grade level.
But you can't put desire into someone. Like if somebody's lazy and they refuse to understand the benefits and the how nice it is to earn mm-hmm. your keep in life. A man shall enjoy the fruit of his labor, so to speak. So we've talked about it, but now let's jump into it. What specifically are you doing with a child who has no desire to read to make that would turn them around to want to read?
Now you're talking reading anything or reading the Bible in
particular?
Let's
talk about the Bible.
Okay. So at the beginning of the book, we talk about, you know, why we do biblical literacy instruction, but then right after that, it's, well, how do I teach this? And the biggest thing is the relationship with the child. So if you're a parent, that's a little bit easier, right? You're around them all the time. Grandparents, same. If you're a ministry leader or a teacher, that takes a little bit more effort, right? But that relationship is so important because you said, well, how do we motivate them to do this?
Yeah.
Well, your life should be a motivating factor. If you're reading the Bible and you're living in a way that you're following God, that's attractive to a kid, even if they're like, not really. No, really. So that's the first thing, that your life is attractive to them. So share it with them. You know, share what God's doing. And they needed to see that you are using the Bible as well.
Let me ask you this. Is it true that women, girls in school are much more capable, hypothetical, theoretical information? For instance, I've been telling this story for years. Tell me if I'm right or wrong.
Okay.
So the teacher says, we're going to learn what an inch is, because we need to know what a foot is, and then we're going to learn what a ruler is. The girls are going, okay, and they see this. The boy's going, I'm not interested in this at all. You take the same boy, and the grandfather says, hey, we're going to go out, and we're going to build a table in the barn. Mm-hmm. Oh, boy, it's relationship time with Grandpa. Okay, they go out there. Now we're going to learn what an inch is. What's an inch? What's an inch? And so on. So the point being that now he wants to learn because there's something to apply it to. Mm-hmm. So I kind of always thought that women, you know, that's why I think little girls do better in school typically than boys, at least in the past in my generation.
I would say it has less to do with them like being better at school. I think school is actually just designed in favor of girls, the way that it's set up. Because young boys especially want to get, like you said, get up and move around.
Tune in again tomorrow at 3 a.m., 7 a.m., or 3 p.m. for New Day with Rhett Palmer.
We'd like to thank Center for Advanced Eye Care, Dr. Mallon, Center for Advanced Eye Care with offices in Fort Pierce and in Vero Beach. Thank you for supporting. It's a new day.
Sometimes I failed, still your mercy remains. Should I stumble again, still I'm caught in your grace. Everlasting, your light will shine when all else fades. Never ending, your glory goes beyond all faith. Your will above all else, my purpose remains. The art of losing myself in bringing you praise. Everlasting, your light will shine when all else fades. Never ending, your glory goes beyond all fame. My heart and my soul, I give you control. Consume me from the inside out, Lord. Let justice and praise become my